for something completely different.
Welcome to Shout Out. Out of the closet and into your ears.
Oh, hello and welcome to this week's Shout Out. I'm Matthew Tosh.
And I'm Lara Lanamy. On this week, we talk about fostering and adoption. What are they and how can you get involved?
Alan Coulthard from Living Without Prejudice will be popping in to give us an update on the charity's work.
It's more than an update though. We have the world exclusive.
Ooh, you've tickled my taste buds.
All this and more.
Right here on Shout Out. Oh, I knew you were
going to
do that.
I have missed doing that so much. How are you?
Well, I'm very good, thank you. It's lovely to see you smiling and beaming. Why are you so happy?
No exams, no nothing. I am a free woman.
Oh, I should have known. Yes, of course. Did it go well? You survived?
I survived. They actually took a lot out of me, but I'm no longer a chemistry student, so that is amazing to me.
Is that official?
That's
it? No more chemistry?
Well, no. I'm going to do a PhD, so another 3.5 more years. But no more of chemistry I don't want to do.
Okay, I'd like to bring in Terry Starr is here this evening. Good evening, sir.
Hello, congratulations.
Thank you, I've missed you so much.
Oh, me too.
How have you been?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. So, is it a great relief now that the finals are over? I have to ask you.
Yeah.
It's stressful, isn't it? Those final exams that students have to sit.
Do you know what the worst thing is, though? For 4 years of your life, you're stressed. So when you're done, you're like, what do I do? Like, I have no purpose in life now. So now I'm like, I want to be stressed again. I want to do something, but I have nothing to do. I have literally filled my days with, like, packing up my room. That's it.
Right.
Apart from that. But, I love chemistry. So for me, not to have it.
Steffi Barnett is with us as well. How do you feel your day?
How do I feel my day?
Yes.
Producing this show. Is that the right answer?
Correct. Yeah, 5 points for that.
My starter for 10.
Now, I learnt something today that physiotherapists are actually physioterrorists.
What? Right?
Yeah, I believe that they are professional sadists because you go along, you pay them money and they hurt you and say, you're going to feel pain, Mr. Tosh, you're going to feel pain, and you do feel pain. But then a few days later, you feel all right.
Yeah.
I had a physio session today. It was excruciating.
So. I've never had that. I've only been to a spa to get a massage.
Massage.
Of course you have.
Yeah, they really love your body, don't they? caress it.
He said, that's my point. That's people think you're going for a massage. So my mum said, oh, you're going for your massage today, Matthew. Yes.
It wasn't a massage then?
Not at all, no.
Oh, no. But you will feel better in a couple of days.
I hope so.
You will, definitely.
Just getting old. Speaking of old, good evening to one of our senior broadcasters, Ivan Jackson, here this evening.
Now, you know, if you try it with me, you get it back eventually, don't you, Matthew? Good evening. How are you?
Where's your walking stick?
Where's my walking stick?
Yeah.
I've left that one at home today.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, I'm all good. No, it's brilliant. And you know, finally feel the summer's here. Barbecues, all sorts. Done it all. It's fantastic. So, you know what? If it all goes downhill from here, I feel as if I've had a summer now. Thank you.
I know. It's been amazing this year. We had a horrible winter, but this summer's been amazing.
I know. I'm looking forward to more barbecues.
I'm trying to do my bit, actually, with the weather, because if you listen to some of the music tonight, I'm trying to focus on the weather.
Oh, Matthew, okay. I do like your style.
Don't the LGBT
community control the weather?
Of course. Every rainbow, there's a birth of a new LGBT
class. Exactly.
I need to write this down.
It's chemistry.
We had it officially from UKIP, didn't we? We did.
I don't think it was their official policy.
Oh, wasn't it?
To be fair to you, but yes, it was one of their councillors, I think.
I thought it was official policy. Yes. Oh, well.
We control the weather. I wish we did.
Oh, my goodness. Well, anyway, Ivan and Terry will be back with us a little bit later because you've got this week's news. Lovely. And we're going to have our producer, Steffi, hovering throughout the show. Lots coming up for you. So the themes tonight are adoption, fostering, and also an update from the charity Living Without Prejudice. But it is fast approaching the time of the week where we do the My Five, and this week's My Five comes from friend of the show, Carl Shilton.
And we should warn you that he talks about domestic violence, a topic which some listeners may find upsetting.
Let's have a listen. My Five on Shout Out.
My name's Carl, and this is my five. Many years ago, when I was 19, 20 years old, I met somebody in a nightclub, and the intention at the time, certainly on my part, was that he was going to be my first one-night stand that I'd ever had. And I took him home, and we had lots of fun, and then he came back. And he kept coming back for nearly 12 years, and we had a 12-year relationship. And to begin with, that relationship was as good as you'd expect. It was, you know, it was good. We moved to Cornwall, we set up a home together, everything was going okay. And then after a few years, we moved from Cornwall to Bristol, and we started running a pub together, and he started drinking a lot. He'd always had a very addictive personality. It was something that I'd always been aware of, but had never really been a problem. As he started drinking more, it became more of a problem. And then I started getting very unhappy. We both started getting very unhappy. And I realised that things weren't working. Things were falling apart. And looked at it just as the natural progression of a relationship. It got to the point where I decided enough was enough. And I left. I ended the relationship. And that's when things went really wrong. That's when things went really, really bad. He got very violent. He got very aggressive. He was threatening my friends. He was threatening my family. The friend I was staying with, I opened her front door one day and found a noose hanging outside the front door. And I very much blamed myself for it. I kept telling myself, he's upset. I've left him and he never thought I would. He's never been on his own before. He doesn't know how to deal with it. It's my fault because I left. It wasn't until the friend, the very good friend that I was staying with, he tried to break into her home, and she decided enough was enough and called the police. The police came round and told me that it was a case of domestic abuse. It just hadn't occurred to me. And it wasn't until they sent round a victim support counsellor and she sat and talked to me. All of a sudden, all these things from years and years over the relationship started adding up and started making sense. Things like, I suddenly realised that not only did I not have any gay friends, I didn't have any male friends. Because if I started making friends with somebody who was male, even through work or through other friends, he would just very quietly drop into conversations. Oh, I don't like him very much. I would just not carry on being friends with that person. It took a very long time to realise, but eventually I realised that I'd become somebody who was just small and frightened and had no confidence and no real idea of who I was as a person. And realising that was really difficult. Once I realised how bad things were and got the police involved, I was very nervous about talking to the police because of I felt they wouldn't take it seriously, because not just because it was a gay relationship, but also because I had this firm idea that I was a man and men don't suffer from domestic abuse, and they would just find it ridiculous. But they couldn't have taken it more seriously. They realised how much risk I was at, so they gave him a restraining order. He wasn't allowed into Bristol. Helped me to move to an area of the city so he didn't know where I was, and referred me for counselling. It helped me to realise that I was somebody that I didn't want to be and that I could do something about it. There were some things that the counsellor suggested that I did to help with my confidence. One of them was keeping a diary of positive things. So at the end of the day, every day, making a note of the most positive thing that had happened during the day. And the other thing was doing a group activity that was a regular thing that I was committing to going to with other people. So I joined Sing Out Bristol, the LGBT choir, and that really helped with my confidence. And I'm here now, nearly 10 years after I ended that relationship. Yeah, every time I see him, he still has a very extreme reaction. But I'm not scared of him anymore. And that realisation was a powerful thing. And realising that I've moved on. I'm not just in a relationship now. I'm a married man. I'm married to a wonderful man who encourages me to be myself. I'm in a relationship that I couldn't have imagined being in 10 years ago, and I'm happy and I'm confident. And I'm just here to say that if you're in that situation, or even if you even suspect you're in that situation, or if any of your friends tell you that they think you're in that situation, do something about it, because it does get better.
If you have a story you could tell in 5 minutes, get in contact. Visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Carl Shilton there with his My Five. And if you have been affected by anything you've heard in that piece, then there are a number of organisations which offer support to domestic abuse victims. In particular, Gallup, the LGBT plus anti-violence charity, operates a free and confidential domestic abuse helpline. The number to call is 0800 999 5428. That number again, 0800 999 5428. Or you can visit the website, which is Gallup, that's GALOP.org.uk.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
I love that
you
song.
You like that. Ain't no mountain high enough. You know who it's by?
Yes, I do.
A very, very, very well-known
Marvin
voice.
Marvin Gaye.
Yes, with... Yeah.
With...
Tammy Terrell.
Yeah.
Tammy Terrell.
I don't know Tammy Terrell, but I definitely know Marvin Gaye.
Well, you'll know the voice.
Yeah, no.
And I just couldn't.
Song.
I couldn't resist playing that after such a hard. Fair play to Carl for being so open.
I know.
And
I
honest.
Must take a lot to do that, but respect to him and. Like, albeit, it's going to help a lot of people. So
we hope so too.
Yeah, we hope so too.
Well, speaking of helping people, it's a good opportunity to introduce our guests for this week. We've got Marie O'Neill, who is a social worker, and George, who is an LGBT foster carer. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
So we're talking fostering and adoption. I think, first of all, what's the difference between the two?
I guess the main difference is that with adoption, you become the parent, you get parental responsibility. So legally, you are that child's parent. You can't give them back.
Yeah.
Okay. And so it's very much the long term, the full package. Yeah. You are taking the role of the parent.
Although within fostering, we do have people that do long term fostering. So until a young person is 18 or 21, but there'll always be reasons why it's better for that young person to remain within their family. In contact with their family.
Do you decide as a foster parent how long you want to do that with one child, or how does it really work?
Yeah. There's lots of different ways of fostering. Mm-hmm. Some people want to do just respite fostering, which that's usually a weekend, a month. For a child that needs a break from their foster carers, or short breaks, which are children that live at home but disabled children. Mm-hmm. Some people do what they call short-term fostering, but generally that could be up to 2 or 3 years. So short-term
is long-term, but short-term in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, okay. And sometimes what happens is that people start with a child short term, but then that child is just the right fit for their family and they decide that they want to keep that child with them.
You see something there I didn't appreciate. I was aware that fostering could happen for sort of short periods of time. I remember when I was a teacher, we had some children who were going to care for like 2 or 3 weeks, but I hadn't appreciated that fostering could also give that respite for families and just give them a bit of a break.
Yeah, for disabled families, yes.
It really is giving, it's working for the child, but also the parents as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, hadn't appreciated that. Yeah, interesting. Well, someone who does fostering is George, who's joined us. George, how long have you been involved in fostering?
excuse me, we've been doing it for approximately 4 years. The first 2 years we did a scheme called Branch Out, which is supporting younger adults as they're leaving the care system and assisting them to get back into independent living, as it were. And for the last 2 years, we've done full-term fostering. We've got now three children placed with us, and all three on long-term care orders.
And what made you decide to become a foster carer? Is it something you've wanted to do for a long time? Or was
not,
it just wake
not
up
so
one
much
day?
Myself first. My husband, he was the one who really pioneered this one through. He had a background in teaching, and a bit like you said yourself, he came across a lot of looked after children. And we had a 3-bedroom house and felt, well, we could do a little bit more than just have two dogs running around the place doing a scatty. So we went down the process, got Branch Out involved, to try and see how we worked with people coming out of the care system. It worked really well. It was a positive outcome. So we thought, let's flip it. And I got on board eventually. And then actually, it's probably one of the best things we've ever done.
What's been the most rewarding part for you?
Gosh, yes, there are what we call quick wins. I think one of our little ones, we had a big birthday party for him. It was the first one he's had. Aww. And he went and his friends came, and it was all this new experience for him. And he came down and he said, I've really enjoyed myself. So I said, well, good. And I said, I think a lot of people love you. And he smiled and he walked upstairs. Aww. You just heard him say, best day ever.
Aww.
So it was like, no. Oh, damn.
Yeah. It gets you in the feels,
yes,
right? It gets you right there.
It was a win.
Definitely.
And sometimes they might say, you know, simple things, are we going home now? It's like, you've got it,
yeah,
you're getting it.
Yeah,
and when they say all the family are going out today, you think
they feel part of a family.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, that's so amazing.
No, it is a good feeling, it's a good vibe when you
did
get
you
there.
Ever so ha- was there because obviously because I'm quite young, I still have this conceived, and this is a question for both of you, I have this preconceived thought that I'm not allowed to, like, say foster or adopt because I am LGBT, and obviously because hopefully eventually I'd have a wife. So they wouldn't, it'd be a harder process for me. So what would you say to, like, younger couples or people thinking about who want to adopt but think it's like there's a barrier to them?
Absolutely not. If you're 21 plus and have a spare room, come to Bristol City Council.
Really?
And foster for us.
That's
absolutely
amazing. Okay.
Yeah, we've actually got a campaign at the moment.
Okay.
Hashtag We Foster Too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about getting people from the LGBT community, more people from the LGBT community to foster for us.
Mm.
Because often people within the community think that adopting's the only option.
Yeah.
And, you know, credit where it's due. George was the person that inspired us to start this campaign.
Yeah, because everyone can give love. It doesn't matter what.
Absolutely.
Who you are. And I feel like, because obviously, like I said, I'm a younger generation, I thought I couldn't adopt, or like I wouldn't be able to have a child like that wasn't mine, because there's so many controversies about it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
No, absolutely not. We would love to have you.
Okay, so yeah.
Now with any form of parenting, fostering, adopting, it's a very steep learning curve. So, and of course, if you have a child from a very, very young age, you're seeing that child develop from an early age, and you're bringing them up with your house rules and helping them learn about life. But one can imagine if you take on board a child that's come from a very distressed background and is really in need of help, the support they need, it must be incredibly significant. How do you go about supporting people to do that kind of fostering?
Well, we have a scheme called the TFCO scheme, which is Treatment Foster Caring Oregon, which is for specifically for children aged 7 to 11 that have got more complex behavioural needs, and that's a very much a CBT, a cognitive behavioural therapy type program where the team works 24 hours around the clock with the foster carers. I mean, it's a bit of a continuum in terms of children's behavior and the challenges, because all the children that come in have trauma. And I think why don't you talk a little bit about, because that's a very specific end, but all our children are traumatized.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
George,
no,
can tell you.
I think you're absolutely right. You don't know what's coming. If you have a child from birth, you get to develop with that child. You know their likes, dislikes. Our three arrived on the first day of summer holiday. So we've never had children before, and they arrived, and it's like, okay, we're going to have to go with this. And I think it's really important, because we foster for Bristol City Council, we had the support around the child. So it wasn't just the social workers. We had our own, and still have our own social worker. There was education, welfare officers, psychologists. So everyone's putting their piece forward, and that's the kind of support you get when, particularly particularly when you foster for Bristol, because you're doing it for the local authority, around you. So, and there are moments when you're just kind of flying by the seat, but as long as you're staying safe, keeping the kids safe, you just got to manage it. And that's when you tap into your social workers, all the support around the children, and you just say, what am I doing? What can I do next?
Yeah, it's a constant learning curve,
I'm
guessing.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the, one of the biggest things you've learned from it? As in, like, how has it developed you, not only just the children?
I think I'm always changing. I think when I started off, I was going to be, right, you're going to do this, you're going to do that, and then we're going to have rules. But these children come from such a background, I just put the rule book away and just roll with it. I think for me, what's really important is always recognizing the positive. So, you know, as a child, you still have to tell the child off and tell it, you correct it. But I always end it. But, you know, it's just that behavior that I'm not loving at the moment. I still love you, and let's hug it out and let's keep it positive on that.
And
deal with issues. And now it's dealt with, we can move on and keep it positive to try and reflect from what they may have experienced previously, I guess.
Yeah.
And do you get to talk to other foster carers as well to like share, you know, hints and tips and best practice?
I mean, that's probably one of the best support networks you can tap into. Mm. We're friends, excuse me, with other foster carers from the LGBT community and others who aren't. And we get together, we have social events, we'll all club together, and we've got kind of a WhatsApp group, and we'll say, right, everyone going down to here today, let's go. And we all watch each other. And it might be the case that if one foster carer is having a really heavy week, we'll say, right, put the kids with us, we're all in a group, you go off and have a drink, or make sure you come back.
Definitely, you've got to come back.
Yes, and it's about that, offering that peer support to one another, and that's valuable.
So what advice would you give to someone who wants to be a foster carer but may not have the confidence, or like you said, might need a little bit of goading? Like, what would your top like three tips be to doing it?
Don't believe everything you read in the press, and try not to put everyone in that pigeonhole. Speak to your local authority, obviously Bristol City Council, and contact them. You can have that initial discussion with them. And I think just go with an open mind. It's a positive experience, and just think, right, here we go. We're going to roll with it. We're going to learn. And that's the best you can do, really. But I think speak to your local authority. They'll tell you all you need to know about it, and also peers and colleagues.
And I just want to talk about the mechanisms of fostering, how you get involved. And one question that springs to mind is, can you foster if you are single? Do you have to be a couple?
Absolutely. No, if you're single, that's not a problem. Mm.
So you just have to, what things do you have to have in place to foster?
Just to have a spare bedroom, really.
Okay.
And, you know, to be child-centred. I mean, it's quite complicated to go into it all, but the basics is an interest and a spare bedroom, and to be over 21. But we want, because our children reflect the community, you know, we don't know what child's coming in at what time. Mm. It doesn't work like that. So we want carers who reflect the community.
Yeah.
We want people that represent all of the community and communities within Bristol.
Okay, so I could be single, I could be in a partnership, I could be married. I've got space, I've decided I want to foster. What do I do next?
So then you would phone 353-4200.
That's a Bristol number.
That's a Bristol number. And speak to one of our senior business support officers who will give you information, take some details from you. We have an information evening every 6 weeks at City Hall.
Okay.
And the night varies, but they'll give you information. They'll start vetting you a little bit, so do some background checks.
I was going
on
to ask
you
if there was
we do. Yeah. After that, if you decide that you want to continue, then we start doing some more checks on you. We go out and do what we call an initial visit, which is just a more in-depth discussion. Once the checks are done, they come back okay. Then the next thing would be what we call the Skills to Foster course, which is a course that's carried out over 4 days, and that gives you the skills to foster. Okay. Following that, your assessment would start, which is quite an in-depth piece of work. You know, as long as, again, you know, you're not tied in. If you decide after the course, you know what, this isn't what I thought it was going to be, or, you know, something happens in your life and it's no longer viable, you can drop out at that point.
So you're not committed,
But then we start doing the assessment. That's quite an in-depth piece of work. You'd be able to vouch for that, wouldn't you?
It's quite in-depth, but it does feel a bit like therapy as well, because you're talking about your life and experiences, but it's an understandable approach. They need to get this out of you to know who they're going to place with.
Definitely.
Okay. And after that, when the assessment, the report's done, which is quite a big piece of work, you would read that report yourself, you know, as the potential foster carer, and then you would go with your social worker who's assessed you to fostering panel. And they will make a recommendation. The social worker will have made a recommendation whether you should be approved. The panel will hopefully rubber stamp that. And then the head of service will be the person that makes the ultimate decision. The agent, we call them the agency decision maker. And then, you know, that same day, I mean, I've been at panel before, and, you know, as soon as we've walked out, it's been...
It can be really quick.
Let's get some beds in there, because we provide furniture and
that's good to know. So if they needed
bunk beds,
toys and stuff like that, they have that support there. Yeah, that's really cool. Yeah, no, I understand that.
And there is a sort of grant to help with some of the living costs, as I understand it. Have I got that right?
Yeah, there's an allowance for the child. So depending on the child's age, there'll be an allowance for them, for their food, towards your household costs. And then once people, we've got what we call three levels. So once people have been fostering more than 6 months, they can apply for level two.
Okay.
Which that's the fee for the child. And then £50 per week per child on top of that.
So where do you go if you want to find out more information?
To begin with, you would phone up 0117 353 4200.
Perfect.
And then information evening will give you more.
Perfect.
And, and just on the adoption, because we focused heavily on fostering, because I understand there's a bit more of a need for foster parents.
Absolutely.
Right.
There's a national shortage. It's a big issue.
But
at the moment,
for adoption, you're an adoption agency. And where would people go to find that information for adopting?
Phone that same number.
It's the same number.
Yeah.
Same number. Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Fair enough. Well, listen, we'd love to carry on chatting more about this. But sadly, we have run out of time.
Thank you so much for having us.
So Marie O'Neill, social worker from Bristol City Council, and George,
thank you,
foster carer, thank you both for coming in, and good luck. Keep up the good work with the fostering.
Cool. We will be at Pride.
Oh, excellent. I look forward to seeing you there. We'll be there as well.
The Shout Out Podcast.
Did you see what I did there? That was David Guetta and Sia.
I love that song.
There's a link.
Is there?
What was the song about?
Flames. Yeah. And Matthew.
And what do I do?
Oh, Pirate
Ignition. Oh, for goodness sake, woman, keep up. Right, okay, so I just couldn't resist that one.
No, it's fine.
Anyway, we're joined by the news team. Hello, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Hello. Again, you're back in again. Wasn't that a good interview about the fostering
and
adoption?
Amazing. Yeah, really good.
Amazing, loads of really useful information.
Okay, are you standing by with some useful news?
Yes. Yes, we are. Positive.
There was
yes,
a pause
we are.
Because we didn't know who was going to answer.
Including some hot off the press news
as well.
That was
just a tumbleweed moment.
I would just like to say the tumbleweed moment was sponsored by BCFM 93.2.
Right, let's get the news.
This is Shoutout News on Thursday the 14th of June.
And in what is breaking news today, human rights campaigner Peter Tatchell has been arrested, bailed and released from custody after holding a one-man demonstration near the Kremlin in Moscow's Red Square. Mr. Tatchell had been holding a placard which read, "Putin fails to act against Chechnya torture of gay people." He also clarified on his Twitter feed that his protest was in solidarity with heroic Russian and Chechen LGBT people. He's due to appear in court on June the 26th, charged with violating Federal Law 54 and Presidential Decree 202, which prohibit all protests near the Kremlin during the World Cup.
Now, after sharp criticism from some quarters, which we reported on in previous weeks, the Jewish Chronicle newspaper has come to the defence of Israel's Eurovision winner, Netta Barzilai, who romped to victory at last month's song contest with a feminist-inspired track called Toy. The paper says that Netta won in the face of adversity, with anti-Israel activists urging people to vote against the song, which was a favourite to win with the bookies. Netta won comfortably, finishing 100 points ahead of Cyprus in second place. Netta
summarised her song as embodying, quote, empowerment for everyone who's been struggling, being themselves, struggling with bosses, with the government, or with someone stepping on them. The Kremlin finance channel Russia Today claimed that the singer had attempted to politicise Eurovision when she told her fans, we'll meet next year in Jerusalem, but this failed to understand that this phrase has been used within Judaism for centuries.
Now, many of us will be familiar with the activism and work of Peter Tatchell, a founding member of the Gay Liberation Front London, ACT UP London and Outrage. He's written extensively on LGBT activism and advocates a self-empowered, engaged community building its own institutions. But you may not know that he also has interests in many other areas and has written on subjects as diverse as atheism, republicanism and self-government for Cornwall, or as I should say in the Cornish language, Curno. He's also supporter of Animal Aid, a long-standing animal rights agency that campaigns for better treatment of animals. Founded in 1977, the charity has helped revolutionise attitudes towards farming, animal welfare and slaughter. This month, Peter and other Animal Aid activists are launching a campaign to try vegan this June. The organisation says the Summer Vegan Pledge is the perfect opportunity for those who aren't yet vegan to give it a try for the month of June. Participants will get all of the help and advice they need throughout the month and beyond. They'll receive a welcome pack, which is full of nutritional advice, recipes and advice on alternatives to animal products, as well as discount vouchers for some of the UK's most well-known vegan eateries. Many LGBT people are interested in fields such as vegetarianism, veganism, animal rights and organic farming. So if you fancy signing up for the month, visit the Animal Aid website. We've linked to it on our newsfeed.
Sir Norman Fowler, now Lord Fowler, one of the unlikeliest of HIV heroes, has been beaten as the UK's longest standing health secretary by Jeremy Hunt, according to a report aired on Classic FM. Lord Fowler served as the health secretary in several governments of Margaret Thatcher between 1981 and 1987. Despite opposition from other conservatives, he was determined that the unfolding HIV pandemic amongst gay men, Latino, African people and people who used IV drugs should be met with assistance and compassion by the state. So he opened channels of negotiation with the then radical group, the Terence Higgins Trust, and the Gay Switchboard. He advocated sexy, safer harm reduction messages, and his autobiography, Don't Die of Ignorance, was published several years ago. He remains an ally of the LGBTQ communities and an active member of the House of Lords.
Local atheist and LGBT blogs are calling on members of both communities to be on the lookout for a series of illegal A4 fly posters that have appeared across the central districts of Bristol, proclaiming that the wages of sin are death, a quote from the Bible. The reverse side of the posters, which have been attached to lampposts and traffic bollards, bears a crudely drawn caricature of non-Christians descending into hell, a place where fundamentalist forms of Christianity believe their enemies will be sent for eternal torment. The posters have so far been sighted in St Paul's, Easton and in the gay village of Old Market. The posters are not authorised by any official body, so if you see them, you can take them down and pop them in any near recycling bin.
And finally, the media website Digital Spy, which has added a rainbow banner to its masthead to mark Pride Month, is reporting that viewers have taken to social media in praise of Channel 4's new television series called Bride and Prejudice, in which various people whose living arrangements or relationships are disapproved of by their parents are profiled. In the first show, which was transmitted on the 4th of June, a multi-ethnic couple, one of whom is a trans man, was featured, along with a man who had previously been married to a woman but was now engaged to his boyfriend. Viewers expressed overwhelmingly supportive views on the various relationships profiled and berated the parents who were trying to undermine their children's happiness.
For these news stories and more, check out our excellent website at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Well, Shout Out News, this has been Terry Starr.
And Ivan Jackson.
Shout Out News.
National and international LGBT news for you.
Shout Out.
LGBT radio for you.
The Shout Out Podcast.
now as I look out the window. It really is, isn't it? Do you see what I did
the
there?
The sun is shining. Yes. No, thank you,
I
Matthew.
I promised you a sunshiny.
That was a little bit of an anthem, wasn't it? So I do agree.
Are you feeling it?
I am feeling it in my bones. Thank you.
Jolly good. We should ask our next guest, actually. Alan Coulthard has come in. Were you feeling it in that one?
Definitely, Matthew.
Getting pumped.
Now, Alan, we've spoken to you before. You're from the charity Living Without Prejudice. And you come in to give us a bit of an update. What's happening at the moment with the charity?
Well, a lot's happening at the moment, Matthew. Just to remind the viewers, we did a charity record last year, actually. It was recorded in August and September in Manchester and London, and we had artists such as Sybil and Sam Bailey give of their time. And the charity, although Living Without Prejudice is my charity, I'm doing it in association with ILGA Europe, which is a registered charity based in Belgium. And they, at the time, were the only real charity I could get interested, really, in the idea of helping people in Chechnya raise money for the LGBT people there who are being persecuted, still being persecuted. We're being persecuted over a year ago.
We heard it in the news earlier tonight. And of course, as well.
Yes, indeed. There's a lot more awareness now, literally in the last few weeks because of the World Cup. But it has been difficult to raise awareness for it. And I hoped, really, that we would actually re-release the track towards the summer, and that looks like what we're going to be doing.
I'm excited.
So it's all happening, really. I actually spoke on the main stage at Gran Canaria Pride back in April.
Wow.
I was invited over there to speak, actually in Spanish and English, because I do speak some Spanish.
Hablas en español.
Sí. Poquito. No, mucho, actually. Hablo español. But I... Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to throw you off.
No, it's okay.
I just love Spanish speakers. I speak
I do speak Spanish, actually. I did speak in both English and Spanish on main stage.
So you're at Pride over in Gran Canaria. Yeah.
And that gave me the idea, really, to have a go at re-recording the track in English and Spanish. And maybe in the future we might do other languages as well.
Ooh.
Such a lovely idea.
Oh, thank you.
No, yes. I love that idea.
Yeah, I thought it was a good idea, actually. A lot of people thought I was a bit mad at the time, but it's going well. And basically, a few weeks ago, a friend of mine said to me, well, why don't you try and tie in with the World Cup? Because Wales actually used the slogan, Stronger Together, 2 years ago when they were in the finals of the Euro 2000. So I thought, well, Stronger Together could be... hopefully a popular football song. So the idea really is that we'll tie in with the World Cup. Go on, sorry.
No. Have you got, so as I understood it, you've got a bit of a crowdfunder going for the single. Have you got, has that got the right? Or is that?
No, it's actually, it was released on Energize Records before Christmas. So they're basically raised, the money's going through Energize Records, and we're channeling it through to ILGA. And I've also been doing some live events as well to try and raise money. So it is an official release, basically. It's already released, and you can buy it now in English. But this Spanish version, English-Spanish version, you haven't heard yet, and you'll be hearing it shortly.
Ooh.
But the other coincidence, if I can just say a few words about this, is that I was actually invited to... Europe to Brussels to the European Parliament a few weeks ago, and there was a conference on Chechnya, and some of the MEPs were really interested in what I was doing because I did actually speak at one point. So it all seems to be coming together, really.
Yeah, so more and more interest is being fueled into it.
Yeah, they're trying to tie into the World Cup as well. There's various things that they're doing, basically, in Europe to try and raise awareness. And, of course, at that stage, they didn't know what Peter Thatcher was doing.
Of course.
But hopefully the World Cup is something that will bring people together and raise awareness for what is still a very important issue. And I'm hoping that people will... go out and buy the record still. It's still available, and maybe we'll even release this new version in the next few months or so.
What's been your favourite thing about re-recording it in Spanish, or like the whole thing, how the whole process? Tell me about that.
It was so funny. It's the best and most amusing studio session I've ever had.
Because really?
The chap who's singing in Spanish that you'll hear shortly, called Gavin Shepherd,
a good friend of mine, we actually had to write the lyrics in sort of English, if you like. So it's, the title is Más Fuerte Juntos, which is Spanish for Stronger Together.
Yeah.
But we actually had to spell Fuerte, F-W-E-R-T-E-E. So an English person would actually be able to understand
it.
Of course. But he did an absolutely fantastic job, I think, for somebody who doesn't speak any Spanish.
Just remind us, because you corrected me earlier, the original single was the cover that you did was released in November. If people want to get hold of it, where's it available?
It's available on the Energize website. Energize.com, and it's available in various formats, digital formats. Also, I think they're still doing CDs, so you can buy it in English at the moment.
Okay, but we have this new version.
We have a new version, indeed, yes.
Well, Alan, we're going to get you to introduce it in a moment. Just first of all, just thank you very much for coming in and updating us with all this fantastic work that goes on. And absolutely, let's hope that this the single's going out does get the message out there for the plight of the people in Chechnya. So, Alan Coulthard, introduce the track, please.
Right, thank you, Matthew. Here is a new version of Stronger Together in English and Spanish, introducing, singing in Spanish, Mr. Gavin Shepherd. Hope you like it.
The Shoutout Podcast.
For more information about Shoutout Radio, visit us online at shoutoutradio.lgbt.
Shoutout.
LGBT radio for you.
Oh, it's very confusing when those jingles come in and it's my voice all over it. I wish I wouldn't do that.
I love that song.
It's great, isn't it?
I know. Because I speak a little bit Spanish and, well, obviously English. I loved it. Like it.
You
I
were right in there, weren't you?
I know, definitely. I know.
Well, let's hope it works.
I know.
Get
I
that message
so.
Out.
Yeah, no, it needs to get out.
It is, indeed.
Do you know what listeners might not know is that Alan was one of the founding fathers of DMC Mix House.
No.
I think it was back in the 70s.
Oh, wow.
80s. Sorry, I've aged, Alan.
Oh, wow.
I can feel his eyes boring in the back of my head.
No, I went to see a music museum thing and it was amazing, like about the 70s vibe and all those music. Oh, wow. But yeah.
Fabulous. Great stuff. Well, we do wish them the best of luck. Ivan's popped back into the studio. We've got Tara and Steph here. Ivan, just picking up on something that you spotted in the news this week.
Yeah, this happened, I think it was actually last week or just a few days ago. We've just seen the first known recorded instance of the spousal veto being used as leverage against a transgender woman by her former partner in order to prevent her from getting a gender recognition certificate. And I think if either Steph or Tara want to explain what a gender recognition certificate is and then what the spousal veto means very quickly.
So presently you have to put an application into a group. It's held in Leicester. There's a form, an application form, you put it in, and yes, unfortunately your spouse is one of the questions that can be asked. They can veto it, so it prevents you from having your birth certificate changed from male to female.
I think what it is that they have to, they put that in because your marriage would be a same-sex marriage, because
of course
previous to same-sex marriage being legalized, you had to divorce if you wanted a GRC and change your birth certificate.
Okay.
But now the same-sex marriages, the wife or the husband can actually veto if they don't want a same-sex marriage, which means then the couple have to divorce.
Crikey. And so you, this is being used.
Yeah, which is fine, you know, if they both want to divorce, but if one partner is using the threat of actually, well, I'm not going to give you this divorce unless you agree to these particular terms, it becomes almost a form of blackmail.
That has
what has happened. And now, of course, Scotland have been very sensible. They've got rid of the spousal veto altogether. They didn't even introduce it, as far as I'm aware, when the Same-Sex Marriage Act happened there. So watch this space for the rest of the UK.
Indeed. Yeah, well, thank you very much for that, team. Well, that is all that we have time for on this week's show.
If you would like to get in touch with us, or you have a story you can tell in 5 minutes, then head to shoutout.lgbt and click on the Contact Us link.
Next week, we sink to new depths as we delve into Titanic the musical. Do we need snorkels for that? Who knows? You'll have to wait and see. See? Ocean Seek? I'll shut up. It's time for me to say goodbye. Say goodbye, team.
Bye. Bye.
Shout out.
LGBT radio for you.